And as we welcome you back to the Two Guys Named Chris Show, usually we have Lisa Lanier on the phone at this time for Lawyer Up every week. It's always a pleasure when she comes in person. It's good to see you.
I'm so happy to be here.
You know, and I'll say this. I don't want to sound over the top here, but I just read that you have better success in the courtroom. The better looking your attorney is, the better you do. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I would agree with that. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what I thought. I knew it. That's right. That's why she's so successful.
Lisa,
there you go.
Listen, I don't want to come off like that creepy reporter.
Creepy, right?
Careful. Yeah. Caitlin Clark situation
The Caitlin Clark reporter, right?
Yeah. I already have a question for Lisa about sexual harassment that just happened.
Our still, first caller's from Biggie. Yeah,
it's still warm.
Call's coming in from the studio. The calls are coming from Inside the house. So if you have a question for Lisa Lanier, we'll certainly take it. We were just reminiscing about the time that the Pine Straw Bandits came and got me,
yes.
And I had to call you from my closet with the helmet on my head.
I will never forget that.
Anyone else ever do that? Lisa?
The football helmet was on my head.
That was unique, yeah.
Do you tell that story at legal conventions?
I do, yeah. Cocktail parties,
you really
all
should.
The time. Yeah.
So the phone number now, if you want to ask her a question, it's free legal advice for the next 20 minutes, 866-470-2GNC. Chris is on the phone with the first one. Chris, you have a job interview question. Go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Love your show. Lisa, I'm so honored to talk to you. I love your segment every Friday.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
About a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago, I was out job searching, and I've been a restaurant manager in the past, fast food industries. This was a fast food entity, so I had an interview with the owner's daughter and another gentleman from corporate office. The gentleman started the interview, asked some questions, but he looked very tired. I mean, his facial appearance, his actions, he just looked very tired. So there was a pause in the interview, and I made a comment and said, you know, all due respect, you look a little tired today. They're overworking you. He stopped the interview right there and just stared me dead in the face for a couple seconds. And then the owner's daughter proceeded with her portion of the interview. About 5 minutes into her interview, he stood up. He says, you look too blanking old and too blanking slow to work for us.
Wow.
Ooh. Wow.
Can you say that in a job interview to somebody? You look too blanking old and too blanking slow to work for us.
You know, I mean, certainly age discrimination is protected. You can't be discriminated against based on your age. But it sounds to me like, Chris, maybe you hurt his feelings a little bit.
Yeah.
And then I think maybe he was just retaliating. Yeah. You know, I don't know that. I mean, it does. Definitely it's off limits, the whole age thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not really sure that was the motivation there. I think maybe just, you know, he took offense to that comment.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
the comment that a
caller
made.
That's what I'm reading into it.
And you look tired. Yeah. Well, you look old.
But you look tired, so he was back at you. Like, I'm tired.
So you don't think Chris has any recourse to try and say, discrimination?
Yeah, he'd have to show that, you know, that it was really his age that, and Chris, you don't sound like you're all that old.
Yeah, I know. You sound young to me, Chris.
Yeah, you sound pretty perky there,
yeah,
Chris.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that. You know, earlier this week, great story, interesting story about a woman. Oh, it's a kid who went into a school and she was in the no corn zone because a teacher, I don't know if you read this story.
I did.
She had an allergy, such a severe allergy to corn, and the girl went in with some corn chips, just like the last couple from the bus, and they found the bag in the trash, traced it back to her, and so she had to be suspended and missed the prom. But our question was, corn is so prevalent in everything we eat. Could someone say, you can't work here because we have a cafeteria that's going to serve corn and you have a corn allergy? Is that okay to say to somebody or no?
So they have to make a reasonable accommodation under the ADA, and that's why they have, apparently this teacher has a literally like a death. If he breathes corn, you know, any little bit of residue, he will die.
Yes.
And so they've made this accommodation by creating this no corn zone around his room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it would be really up to him if he wanted to take a job where there was a proximity to a cafeteria and take on that risk.
Right.
But this poor kid, I feel bad for the girl.
I did too.
Somebody handed her a bag of Takis.
Yes.
On the bus. And I don't even know if a kid thinks it through that this has corn in it. You know, she was saying there's a picture of a corn cob in the hallway.
Yeah.
But it's not, I don't think it computed for her.
I agree.
I feel bad for her. I think they ought to reverse that. And she has a due process right in not being suspended and being able to go to school. So she actually has some legal recourse, and her parents are taking it to court.
Well, I think they should. Yeah. I agree. I thought that was.
And after we discussed it, you know, we started getting deluged with information. Corn is in
everything.
Everything. It's in gasoline.
That's
it's in
tough.
Sodas.
Yeah, that is tough.
It's a terrible allergy.
Donald, you have a question for Lisa Lanier. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning, Lisa. Real quick question. I see these dump trucks all the time that say, keep 200 feet back, not responsible for broken windshields. Well, if something pops out of their bed and cracks my windshield, do I have a case?
Good question.
That's a great question. Yeah. So if it's just like a pebble or something, you know, that which is what they're really talking about with that sign, then no, you really wouldn't. I mean, they wouldn't. They would refuse. They would just say, you know, we don't. I mean, you don't know for sure if it came off that truck versus it was on the road and the tire kicked it up or whatever. But where you do have recourse, and I've had some horrible personal injury cases where, like one, for example, a brick flew off of a truck because it was not a properly secured load.
Yeah.
And I mean, it 70 miles an hour on Interstate 40.
Yeah.
It went through a lady's windshield. I mean, and it left her brain dead.
Oh,
I mean, it was terrible.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. You see coolers, you see, you know, toolboxes and stuff. If something is improperly secured, that's different. That's negligent. But where it's just, they don't really have control over, they can't get every single little pebble off the back of the dump truck.
That makes sense. Mm. Thank you. Great question, Donald. I like that. Let's go to Dave, who has a question about auto sales for Lisa Lanier. Dave, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. I went 6 months ago and bought a tried to buy a new vehicle through a dealership in South Carolina where I live. Mm. I didn't like the way they were dealing on the first vehicle, so I just left them, just cut it off, canceled it, didn't want to do anything. Went to another dealership and got approved right at that moment, bought the vehicle, picked it up within 2 days. And then within a month, during a month after I bought the new one, I started getting these denial of credit from these other finance companies saying I didn't have enough credit, which I didn't, but on the truck that I did buy, they didn't have a problem with it. But I started getting all these denial letters, and then it drove my credit score down from like a 780 to like a 660. So is that illegal for them to shotgun? I was told it was called shotgunning your credit when they do that.
All right.
So the first car dealership put it on your credit that you had reneged or defaulted or something of that nature?
Yeah, they said I didn't have enough credit.
Okay, gotcha. All right, yeah. So they say it and spread it around, right?
Yeah, and so first little caveat is I'm not licensed in South Carolina, but I think just like in North Carolina, you can write to the credit bureau, and they will often correct something that's on your credit report. And people think it's like this big mysterious, you know, mothership out there that you can't communicate with,
right.
But you really can. And you can even communicate with them by phone, but it's better to do it in writing.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage you to do that. I don't necessarily think it's something you'd want to go hire a lawyer for, but I think if you, you know, maybe call up and find out who to send a letter to and ask. And a lot of times they will actually remove things. They do take action, investigate, and that sort of thing.
Wow. Because you're right. You think, well, that'll never happen.
Right.
You know, too much red tape to cut through there.
Yeah.
We had an emailer, too. This was an interesting question. I mean, more calls are coming in. 866-470-2GNC is the phone number. But the emailer said he rented a home on VRBO. And their advertising is, they lead with, you'll never have to share a home with anybody else. So they're going to Asheville for the weekend. And they get there, and it turns out they've rented only the basement, and the people who own the home are upstairs. So they didn't feel comfortable with that because of the advertising. They're like, this is false advertising.
Right.
So they say, well, we're going to leave and go get a couple of hotel or a hotel room for the night. Then they were going to write a bad review on the Vrbo website, and they were stopped from doing that because they had not technically stayed at the home. So they couldn't write a bad review, and they're out $1,000. Surely they have some legal recourse to get that $1,000 back. Do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I would think so. I mean, it's one of those situations, though. Is it worth, you know, the squeeze? Because, you know, are they going to hire an attorney and pay them, you know, $500 an hour to get $1,000?
Right.
Probably not.
That stinks, though. Oh. That's how things – that's why this it's – too bad, you
it
know,
is,
because
yeah.
they're out $1,000 and it's just one of those, well, too bad moments, you know?
Yeah, you know, they could, if it happened in North Carolina, I assume it did, you said Asheville,
right?
So and I assume they're from North Carolina.
Yeah.
The Attorney General in North Carolina has a consumer protection division, and they actually do look into things. So if you file a formal complaint with them, then they will get involved. They will contact the other, you know, the company. And a lot of times they'll try to work it out and get. And sometimes they'll get your money back.
All right. Well, now you're talking.
Let the attorney general do it.
Thank you. Mark.
He's running for governor. He might do it.
Oh, yeah. He might. He might actually do something here.
That's right.
Mark, you have a question about the city sewer. Go ahead.
Yeah. I live in a small town in Davidson County. I've been living there renting 21 years. Mm-hmm. Just found out at the end of last year I've been on a septic tank. Mm-hmm. And I've been paying city sewer the whole time.
Ooh.
And they're telling me they can only give me 3 years of my money back.
You've been paying city sewer the whole time, even though you were on a septic tank.
And you weren't connected to it.
And you didn't realize this.
Yeah, I didn't know it until last year. The septic tank started overflowing in the backyard, and my landlord had to get the house hooked up to the city sewer.
What's that smell?
No.
Crapper's full. We know that.
Yes, it is.
That's Christmas vacation stuff, right? My God.
That's crazy.
What is that horrible smell? That smell is our crap. Okay.
Meet the parents.
So,
that's crazy. Was the landlord just not wanting to spend the money to connect to the city sewer, or was there
I don't know, but I mean, he did it. He did it at the end of last year after all that happened.
Because it was probably a toss-up between really replacing your septic
and doing that. Yeah, and doing that. But he would get only 3 years back, not more than that. Is that the law?
I guess they're basing that probably on the statute of limitations, I would guess.
That's right.
But that's pretty lousy. I mean, it seems like they would, you know, they could waive that.
They could if they wanted to.
If they wanted to,
is it worth it for him? All those years of bills.
Yeah, that's awful.
But and is that on record somewhere exactly how much he paid monthly,
some
years ago?
Yeah.
They could come back and get it.
So is that a city issue, Lisa?
Yeah, but it sounds like they're saying, look, you only have a three-year right to look back.
So would a lawyer be able to coax them to drop that statute of limitation?
Probably not.
Oh, man. You're crap out of luck. I'm sorry. Right. I'm sorry, Mark.
Stinks.
Dang, that really does in every possible way. Anonymous, you have a question about a fall down, and you're on with Lisa Lanier. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Make this long story short here. My wife was shopping at a grocery store, and she was getting out of her SUV, stepped out into a storm drain that was missing a section out of it. And this is 3 months before, or 3 months after she had back surgery, and she had to have three more back surgeries to correct falling through the storm drain.
Ooh.
So what we've talked to other attorneys. We're just wondering what our recourse is here.
Now, I think I've heard basically is, does the store have an obligation to make sure that storm drain is fixed? And I think that's the answer, but go ahead.
Yeah, so the owner of any premises has a duty to correct any known hazards or any hazards that reasonably should have been known. And so probably a missing grate, depending on how long it had been there, it's probably something they should have known about.
Right.
So you've probably cleared that hurdle. The problem that your wife has is causation, we see this all the time. It's the number one thing in my experience that companies attack a claimant on is, well, you had all these pre-existing conditions. And so like the jury gets instructed that they're not to award any money for pre-existing conditions, but only to the extent that there's an aggravation or change of that condition.
Yeah.
And that's hard to prove, because you already had all this problem. You had this surgery. How much of it is new? And so what tends to happen is jurors kind of look at it like a pie.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever your current damages, let's say she had $50,000 in medical bills that they would award, they'll carve that out and say, well, let's carve out a quarter of that as new. And so it ends up that, you don't get that much for those claims sometimes.
Yeah.
But you may want to pursue it, though. I mean, particularly if her doctor can really point to, the best thing is if he or she can point to something like on an MRI and say, here's what's changed because of that fall.
Right. Yeah. That's critical, isn't it?
Critical.
The before and after.
Yeah, exactly right.
And would you find, Lisa, too, that in that case, is the store responsible for the parking lot? Because often those centers are owned by other entities.
Right. Typically, we end up making a claim against the store itself as well as the company that maintains the shopping center. And usually one of them will step up with the primary insurance.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Anonymous. I hope that works out for your wife.
That's
too bad. Yeah. It's too bad she had the pre-existing back conditions before she stepped on the storm grate. Paula, you're talking about used cars and have a question for Lisa Lanier, our official attorney from Lanier Law Group. Go ahead, Paula.
My daughter purchased a Nissan from a Kia dealership,
mm-hmm.
and 3 months later, the transmission went out. Mm-hmm. So we took it to, you know, they wouldn't fix it. They said that they didn't honor that. My question was, is there not a lemon law in North Carolina?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Unfortunately, Paula, lemon laws only apply to new cars. Used cars do not at all have any rights under. In fact, it's terrible. Used cars, very much buyer beware. Unless they offer you a warranty, there's really no warranty. And this happens all the time. And the only thing that I've seen people do successfully sometimes is if you can show that, number one, they knew there was a transmission problem, and number two, they intentionally hid that from you.
Yeah.
You know, they would have had to have, you know, you would have had to have asked, and they would have had to have lied to you, or you would have, you know, or they would have, like, if there was a transmission light on and they made it go off or something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It would have to be fraud.
Well, it's just bad luck, isn't it?
It's terrible. Yeah. But I hear this all the time. And it, unfortunately, lemon law only applies to brand new cars.
What's the deal on a new car? Let's say this had been a brand new car, and 3 months later, it's got a terrible transmission goes out. Do you for free get a, well, you probably, it's under warranty
you
anyway.
Have to, well, I mean, but you also, like, the lemon law itself, you have to go back, I think it's 4 times. And it has to be, you know, a sort of a major system with the car. I mean, it can't be like your cigarette lighter or something like that.
Thank you,
Paul. I'm sorry. Does that term of that law, Lisa, last 6 months, a year for the new cars?
You know, I think for new cars, it's something like 4 years or something.
4 years?
Yeah,
okay.
I think
that's
so.
That's pretty good.
You have to look at the sticker on the used cars, too, because sometimes there is no warranty, or sometimes it's just a 30-day.
Yeah, it's usually like 30 days.
I like you referencing the cigarette lighter, too. My car still has one.
Yeah.
These guys, they're all newfangled. Right. They're all like, they don't even have a key. I got a key and a cigarette lighter. I got all that. I got a 6-disc changer in the trunk.
Oh, nice.
The windows roll down.
That's right. Literally. Cause why? Nothing enough to break. Sarah, you're talking about nursing and a question for Lisa Lanier. Go ahead.
Good morning. I'm an ER nurse, and sometimes we have patients that come in and they want to record us while we're taking care of them. My employer has informed me that I cannot refuse to allow them to record me. Is that true?
I don't like that. That's an excellent question.
That's a great question. Yeah. And kudos to you for being an ER nurse. My mama was an ER nurse, and they're lovely people.
Yes.
Yeah, doing great work. Mm. So if it's the policy of your employer to allow them to record, then you think you have to go along with that or risk losing your job. But it's interesting. Most hospitals don't allow recording.
Mm, yeah,
that actually really came about some years ago when. OB, you know, doctors were being sued for delivery, labor and delivery problems because everybody was trying to film their baby being born and they caught all the negligence on video, so it was like skewering these doctors. And so most hospitals won't allow that. So that's interesting. It's not, I don't think that's something that is coming from necessarily a legal requirement that you allow that. I think it's the hospital's policy.
So she has no, other than just breaking policy, she has no like legal recourse to say, you can't film me.
Yeah.
Like, and thank you very much, Sarah. Mm. We've talked to you before about like when you're out in public, like I know one celebrity one time didn't want somebody taking pictures or videos of her kid playing soccer, but you can do that, right, out in public. I can go video whatever I want, basically.
Absolutely.
Let's go to Samson, who's talking about being fired and has a question about that for Lisa Lanier.
Am I on?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Oh, yes, sir. I worked with the school system, our local school system, for over, it was close to 60 years. And we had a principal, and basically, you know, he didn't like me, and basically had people write in the statements word for word matches, you know, and there was no like proof that I actually, you know, did the things they said I did, and I was fired with no chance to defend myself or anything like that. Do I have a legal recourse?
Yeah, so, you know, North Carolina is an employment at will state. And so for your typical, you know, private sector job, you can just be fired, you know, because the principal doesn't like you. But here, this is not a private sector job. It's a government job. And government jobs are different. And even though it's still technically an at will state, there's an added element of protection for people in government jobs where you get due process rights.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could require, you know, you could hire an attorney and they would have to give you some kind of, you know, hearing or some kind of answer, some kind of ability to challenge
right.
the fact that you had all these statements that you think were kind of trumped up against you.
So he does have an avenue, but it will cost him.
It will cost you, yeah. And it may not be worth it. Again, yeah, exactly. Mm,
that's the whole thing.
Yeah, we just don't work for free, you know.
So many times you say that.
Yes.
I did write down $500 an hour. That's
right.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything out loud about that, but I had no idea.
Did you hear that, Biggie?
No, $500 an hour, Biggie. That's right. God, it's so great that we're done.
I hate the time is up.
We're done. The time is up. It goes so quickly.
It goes so quickly.
Bigger and better waiting for you. But thank you so much for being on with us today. Lisa Lanier, our official address.
You're the best.
Two guys named Chris Show. And you're fantastic to have you in here. I hate we have to say goodbye.